Good afternoon, folks. And thanks, Luz and Becca, for doing this. So just a little bit. So as I mentioned, I just finished nearly 9 years at Network Health, which is a managed Medicaid organization in Massachusetts. About 130,000 Medicaid members, and then about 100,000 if you combine the Commonwealth Care insurance population, so close to about 230,000 members. But I wanted to talk a little bit about our care program and why, with the fortune of meeting up with Dan in June of 2012, it was like, wow, I'd really like you to work with our team. We had set up teams of community health workers, which I'll talk about, and then talk about what our program is, and then that collaboration with the Right Question Institute and some of the lessons that we learned. It was very interesting to experience it from a health plan standpoint. I was really working to make sure that we had 3 years ago that we set up this community health worker program geographically based. I wanted to make sure it was sustainable from a health plan standpoint to do this, and eventually to work on spreading it to practices. So we have a lot of community health workers in our network, community health centers in our network, and also a lot of private practices and large delivery systems across the state. So just a little bit about Network Health. We have gone through two NCQA accreditations, for those who know about that. For health plans, it's a big deal, and got excellent both times. And you know, we're really proud of the work around the Medicaid being nationally ranked third for the last 2 years and in the top 10. And the reason is, you know, some of it's on your accreditation score, and some of it's on your HEDIS measures, which are your quality measures, but also a portion of it's on patient satisfaction, so member satisfaction with the health plan. And the number one for a lot of years has been Fallin Community Health Center outside of Worcester, but they have 10,000 members. And Kaiser Hawaii's been number two, and they have 30,000 members. So I always like to say we're the number one large health plan in the nation. We also have we've been really a number of awards for our integrated care management program, which I'll talk a little bit about. And we did get a multicultural healthcare distinction, a certification from NCQA. Around our efforts to try to collect information around ethnicity and language, and then other awards. So we're the only Medicaid managed care organization in Massachusetts that doesn't carve out behavioral health to a vendor. And that was a really important piece. As I mentioned, I'm still practicing a little bit as a family physician, and that idea of integration and care was really important to us, and we kept it in our programs. A lot of collaboration and cross fertilization. So we have medical care management, behavioral health, social care management programs, as well as our clinical community outreach team. And we developed that to focus on the high risk need patients with high risk needs. So this clinical community outreach team, a mix. Community health workers, we call them in general. We did have some LPNs and also social workers, bachelor-level social workers. But the real focus was to get them certified, get them trained, have them, and then there is telephonic outreach from staff. We began the program almost 3 years ago. But so for those who are in the Boston or Massachusetts area, we had in Worcester County, which is our largest in central Mass, our largest concentration in the north, and then we added Boston and then the southern region. And really we're able to do, which is my passion has been, how do we bring this? So many community health centers around the nation, so many other folks have had grant-supported efforts, and they get the grant and they do great work, and the grant goes away and it's gone. Or they might keep it up, but they have to cut down the staff considerably because they're funding it out of it. So the idea was to try to get this in a way that, given where healthcare costs have been, that it would be sustainable and we could demonstrate sustainability. So these folks were, and that's probably one thing that's real different, but we had them engaging members from 2 to 6 weeks. And we taught them about motivational interviewing. That was what we knew at the time as the kind of more advanced way to engage. We wanted to connect them with primary care. We wanted to make sure they were aware of what we had to offer, because there's a lot of benefits that you get when you're part of a Medicaid health plan, especially a managed care. And then see if, and we wanted to assess if they, where they were in terms of their needs for care management. Were they in a long, you know, much more complex situation? Did they need a lot of social support, which is often what happened? And in fact, the largest referrals are to our social care managers, who are really to work to connect them to community-based organizations. But this clinical community outreach team got that benefit, so they knew what was in the community, and they did a lot of connecting themselves. And in fact, their manager oversees both clinical community outreach as well as social care management. And they all report up to the same director. That was the integrated care management model. But what we did to do this sustainability was to focus on our folks who we identified as the likelihood of being in the top 10% highest risk. And it's not what I'd like to see in the long term. I'd like to see the same kind of effort given further down. But that focus really allowed the sustainability and cost return on investment to be demonstrated, I think. And we looked at folks who were in that top 10%, if they weren't in another program already, and if they had evidence of substance abuse that was not treated. So if we had a claim for a substance abuse diagnosis and there was no evidence of treatment, either pharmacologic or counseling, they were put to the high list of the priorities to be outreached. And, you know, when they went in there, they talked about the panel. They also communicated with the physician. So once they found out, if they asked the patient, well, do you have a primary care doc? Do you like him? If it was no, do you want to change? I can help you change. And once they did get that, they really worked with them to just the basic demographics, confirm contact information, schedule follow-up appointments. They did a depression screening. And then really we're focused on literacy issues that they might have. I know one of our community health workers went into the hospital with a patient they've been trying to get a hold of for quite a while, and they went to the hospital, they'd gotten hospitalized, and the person had been there for about 6 days, and they had all their, they were getting ready to be discharged, they had all their information, they could not read. And it was our community health worker who identified that and then was able to give them the support that they needed. So we did do a program return on investment. That was one of the things I'd committed to. I have a really sophisticated or had a really sophisticated program evaluation person, a PhD. And we looked at a control group and the ones that had gotten the intervention, made sure that they were very similar in terms of their clinical characteristics. What we found was that medical expense decreased for both groups over time, but pretty significantly more with the group that had the intervention. And that was really the only difference. Everything else they were doing was part of it. And, you know, that you folks who are health researchers know much better than I do, but, you know, just depending on what parameters you use and how you look at it, you can get very different results. And we looked at it the more traditional way, which was just looking at total cost with excluding pregnancy, because it turned out a lot of folks who we got who were intervened, there was a larger number of folks who were pregnant. And so it made the ROI look 4.0. It was tremendous. And so we said, well, we got to get rid of that. And we did in the traditional way, and we got this 2.7 ROI. And Anju said, that's ridiculous. I have to do it a different way because it's too good. Nobody believes in ROI over 2. And when we did a pretty rigorous prospective risk adjustment, we looked at their prospective risk before, we looked at them after, we looked at the two groups. We still came up with a 1.5 ROI with all costs in of managing the program. So it was good. This we found out after, and this was not, they were not yet taught the right question strategy for this piece. They did engage last year, and for a year now they've been working with Luce and Dan and Beck and some other of the other staff, and I'm just excited to look at what will happen next. So what we did, really the reason behind it, as I mentioned, was one, to really overlay this new set of skills, that it really became clear that the engagement and empowerment aspect of it, so not only for our members, but for our staff. So to me, it was really important, because these are folks, all the same language, the same culture, the same ethnicity as our members, multilingual, a lot of experience, a number of them immigrants, a number of them coming from households. And I think giving them this ability to understand about decision-making and questions, I thought would be impactful on them and our membership. So we really wanted both of that. And what of course, I didn't understand or appreciate, but the series of trainings were really clear about how detailed and specific the right question folks needed to get into the workflows. We do a lot of work to track our interventions, so they had to fill out a lot of information. And what Luce told me and said, you know, that filling out of the information, they're so concentrated on that, they can't really easily integrate this right question strategy in terms of teaching about asking questions. Now, they worked at it, and they really did integrate that, so they were able to over some time and over some efforts doing that. So it was really tremendous to see that. And this, I have to give credit to, I don't know if it was Luce and Becca, the team there, to really talk about this idea, but it's so true. It was a great thing. So the traditional community health worker, gather information, you know, the motivational interviewing to try to get folks to have some understanding, but and then really they saw themselves as giving information to the members, giving information. They were excited and passionate about that, and they were seeing themselves as advocates. And then this whole idea of adding that to build on skills, so it's a skill building for, as I said, themselves and the members to help and understand about decisions, prioritizing questions, and then really making it clear and reinforcing that. So this outcome piece was really important to, you know, and the one thing which we'll talk about is we didn't figure out a way. I wanted to do PAM scores or something like that on our patients. We really never got where we were able to do that in an effective way, but I would have been excited to see that. And then even in my mind, tie that to total medical expense as the next step. But in this case, I think the idea that both the community health workers get a better sense of themselves, of the members that they're interacting with, and the patient gets the member gets a better sense of what's going on with them. And folks were very, very excited about this program. They really have been consistently. As I mentioned for this thing, it is very different from motivational interviewing. Complementary. So if we're going to give a bunch of skills, but if I was going to choose one, I'd say go with the effective patient strategy. It really took a lot of training. It took feedback, recreating, and then going back and modifying the curriculum and going back and doing that. And there's some quotes about, this is quotes from some of the staff that talked about, you know, how awkward it feels at first to do these things. They had, as I said, and these are folks who've been that for a number of years, been working in the field, and now they were doing something different for them. But it's really, you know, as a physician, I can say I need to pause more often. We all recognize that. And then, you know, this idea of defining decisions so that which I think is just a critical and helpful way to a perspective to add, really helps improve communication. And the language of the community health workers at the health plan has changed in this process. They use a different language to communicate with each other about what's going on about members. And I think this idea that putting members in control, it really is an empowerment technique. So some of the challenges, you know, still how best to measure impact. As I said, I've got this ROI for just our program on the whole. I'd love to figure out a way, and I think Stephanie would love to figure out a way. Stephanie's the manager of this program, to really demonstrate the added impact. And then this, you know, concern around persistence of training. We do have, although not a lot of turnover, we have some staff turnover. We've expanded the program. So this train-the-trainer idea, it's pretty hard to replicate the magic of these folks, but I know they're committed to doing it in their training. So I think that train-the-trainer was very important. And then we had always had a vision of expanding to not only the community health workers, but also the rest of the clinical team and even our customer service team. So they might not do the training, or they wouldn't do the training, I would imagine, but if they were aware and we have a way in our system to mark that a patient had gotten this training, they could reinforce it with just a sentence or two. And so that was really a larger vision if we really could get that collaboration together over time. But it's been